For the first time in history, Ireland has a higher per capita income than England. And for the first time ever, the Irish are importing labor rather than exporting it. The European Union's got its own Marshall Plan, and big money has been going into Ireland as it enjoys one of the hottest economies in Europe. Coming up on Travel with Rick Steves, we'll discuss the Emerald Isle from north to south.
You have one of the great things about your country to be that you're great talkers and great conversationalists. It's very flattering to hear that from an American.
Irish people have always liked to play with language.
We've got Stephen McPhillamy, who's from Northern Ireland, and Declan Field, who hails from Cork in the Republic, in our studio together to get you right up to date on Ireland. While it's no longer a cheap destination, the crack, that's conviviality and good conversation in the colorful pubs, is the best anywhere. And the pubs are now smoke-free. Join us for a chat with two friends who are blessed with that wonderful gift of gab as we visit Ireland, coming right up on Travel with Rick Steves. I'm Rick Steves. Join us for a chat with two friends who are blessed with that wonderful gift of gab as we visit Ireland, coming right up on Travel with Rick Steves. First, let's start with your calls and emails. And we got Shannon on the phone in Toronto in Canada. Shannon, thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What are your travel plans?
I'm traveling to Europe for the first time at the end of the month. I have 2 weeks to visit Amsterdam, Paris, and Italy, and I just want to make sure I'm not being too ambitious as far as the places I would like to see.
Right. So you've got 2 weeks, and this is a common concern for people who haven't been to Europe yet. You know, how much time does it take to get from A to B, and what's a reasonable amount of sightseeing to do in a given amount of time? I think of course, you don't want the if it's Tuesday, it must be Belgium kind of insanity. On the other hand, I think just as bad as going too fast is going too slow. Now, you got 14 days, and you want to do Amsterdam and Paris for sure, and then basically as much of Italy as is reasonable after that. Is that correct?
Right.
How much time do you want to spend in Amsterdam?
I think I'll be there for between 3 and 4 days.
Okay, so let's just think about that. 14 days. I would say, remember, it takes about 5 hours to get from Amsterdam to Paris by train. So are you flying into Amsterdam and flying home from Italy?
That's right.
That's a very smart thing. That's called open jaw, and it's no financial penalty or anything. It's half the round-trip fare from wherever you are in America or Canada over there and half the round-trip fare back from where you decide to choose fly home from. Okay, so you're going to fly into Amsterdam, spend 3 or 4 days there, take the train. I would take the train in the evening after a day of sightseeing in Amsterdam. I'd leave at 5 o'clock and get into Paris in the evening.
Right.
And because you can just kind of relax and enjoy the evening train ride and not spend any of your sightseeing days en route. Yeah. And then I'd give yourself 4 nights and 3 days in Paris. And then you could either fly, you could talk to your travel agent about flying down to Italy, or take the overnight train from Paris to Italy. There's plenty of overnight trains. And that gives you basically a week in Amsterdam and Paris and a week in Italy. And if you got a week in Italy, I would imagine most tourists, they want to do the predictable stuff, Florence, Siena, Rome, the Riviera. That's going to be very crowded in the summer. If you're going to be there in the spring or the fall, it would be more reasonable. But any time of year, you should anticipate crowds in Italy. So I would make your reservations for hotels well in advance. What would you like to do in Italy? The sites are 3 hours apart by train, so it's very easy to get from point to point in Italy. What would your priorities be, say the best three stops?
Well, my priorities are definitely Cinque Terre, Rome, and I think Florence.
Perfect. Well, take
I read a lot about Siena in your book, so...
Yeah, I would say you got to be realistic here, Shannon. I would say take the train from Paris to the Cinque Terre and then spend 2 days there, and in 3 hours you can get to Florence, spend 2 days in Florence and finish your trip in Rome, fly home from there.
Terrific.
Boy, that sounds exciting.
Very exciting.
Wow. Well, thanks for your call and have a great trip.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye.
Dee from San Francisco emailed us, and Dee has an interesting comment here. Let me read it to you. Come on, Rick, fess up. You don't really travel for months at a time in Europe filming with only the backpack on your back and that little bit of luggage. Well, I think it would be a good idea to pack light on your trip since we have to schlep all our luggage with no porters. Only one pair of pants, one pair of shoes, and one shirt? I don't think so. What do you really wear when you're waiting for your clothes to dry? How do you hang up your clothes to dry in those teeny little rooms? Okay, Dee, let me tell you the truth about packing light. Whether I'm going for 2 weeks or 2 months, I pack precisely the same. There's no logical reason to take more for a longer trip. I live out of the 9x22x14-inch carry-on-the-airplane-size bag that you see me, I promise. That's all I ever take. In fact, I don't want to take more. If I had Sherpas, I'd set them free. I am into pack and light. It's part of my vacation. It's part of the beauty of traveling. When I'm on the road, I don't have a lot of junk to worry about. Now, I do have two pairs of pants, so when I'm washing my clothes, I'm wearing one pair of pants, and I've never washed both of my pants at the same time. That would be an interesting trick. I talk about washing the clothes in the room, but to be honest, I've got enough money now to take them out to the laundromat. And I drop them by there, or even have the hotel do my clothes, and then I'm out sightseeing and enjoying my time while somebody else is doing the hard work of washing my clothes, and I come back to my room, and they're ready for me to go again. Do I just take one pair of shoes? Yes, I do. It sounds barbaric, I think, to some people that I would wear the same pair of shoes for 40 days in a row. I take them off at night. It works just fine. I'm not saying you only need one pair of shoes, but if you can get by with one pair of shoes, that's packing light, and it behooves you to pack light. Think about it. In Europe, have you ever met anybody who after five trips brags, every year I pack heavier? Nope. With experience, you get serious about packing light. For everything you need to know about packing light, check out our ricksteves.com website and search for packing light. This is Travel with Rick Steves, and right now travel takes us to Ireland. And I've got two good Irish friends with me here, guys that helped me lead my tours around Ireland. We want to answer some of your calls and give you a look at a very popular and rewarding corner of Europe to explore, the Emerald Island, Ireland. I've got Declan Field, who grew up in Cork in the south of Ireland, and Stephen McPhillamy, who's a tour guide from the north of Ireland. Thank you guys for being with us today.
Thanks, Rick.
Thanks for having us, Rick.
What's a good way to meet the people when you're traveling through Ireland?
If you're driving through, take your own drive through, take a car with you, and make sure that you stop off in pubs in the towns and go up to the bar and maybe order a pint and start talking to the guy next to you. And the guy next to you, before you know it, he'll give you his whole life story and his mother's and his father's and everything else. And within 5 minutes, you'll be talking to two or three other people around the place as well. So
that's right. When you go to the bar, they'll assume you want to talk. If you sit at the table, is that...
Yeah, even if you're sitting at the table, but basically socializing is done in the pubs and bars in Ireland to a large extent, by any means to all.
But if you really want it, let's say you're lonely, you're a little awkward, you don't know anybody, and you're a traveler, and you sit right on a stool at the bar.
Yeah.
That people know you want to, you're there to talk.
You're there to talk, then, yeah.
It's a public house.
Yeah, a conversation will start pretty much straight away, any American visitor will find them very friendly, straight off.
Oh, yeah.
There's an old... adage in Ireland that goes that there's no such thing as a stranger, just friends we have not yet met.
And when I'm traveling in Ireland, I love to stay two nights in the same spot because if I go back the second night to the same place, I feel like I'm a sort of an honorary local.
Absolutely, yeah. And people will be flattered as well that you're coming back to meet them and, you know, come back to their town for a second night.
The pub really is the sort of extended living room of the neighborhood. This is where you go to hang out and meet your friends. It's a public house, right?
A public house, yeah.
Really what it is. Now, big news in Ireland travel right now is they're smoke-free in the pubs. Is that right?
Yeah,
it's going great.
Is that enforceable? I mean, people actually not smoking in the pubs?
Yeah. No one's going to go to jail over it or nothing, but there's big, heavy fines. But the big penalty they have is if you have people smoking in your bar, the government can... refuse to renew your alcohol license, which in Ireland is a license to print money.
Oh, really?
We had a little revolution. Down in Galway, there was a...
Down in Galway, that's right, yeah.
One of the bars, which will remain nameless, decided to, you know, they were going to go broke because nobody was able to smoke anymore. So they put up a sign, put ashes on all the tables, put up signs saying smoking tonight. And hundreds of people came from all over the town and they lit up and got a lot of publicity in the press and the TV and the radio and whatever. And
he was closed down within a day or two, wasn't he?
And government crushed his revolution brutally. Told him that if he didn't stop, they'd stop renewing his license.
This really was quite a dramatic move. Overnight, no smoking in the pubs of Ireland.
Exactly, yeah.
And I mean, they were the smoke havens in Europe up until then. So many people loved Ireland. They loved the pubs except for the smoke. The Americans are very sensitive.
But you know what's
smoke.
Happening now, Rick? In Ireland, the people are going outside the pubs and smoking outside the pubs. And that's where all the crack is. Everybody goes out and congregates around the door and people are talking about, you know, meeting new friends and whatever, you know.
Okay, you say that's where all the crack is. I'm sure eyebrows go up in America and ears perk. Crack, that's not a legal drug. Crack, what does that mean exactly?
That means fun, C-R-A-I-C.
It's a Gaelic word for conversation and conviviality.
Conviviality,
good
fun.
Crack. Yeah. You see pubs advertising, in the window it says, good crack here.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That means
Just come fun. Here. That's social intercourse.
So now, the action in a lot of cases is outside. They're taking their beer outside and they're smoking their cigarettes.
Yeah. So you walk through the streets of Dublin now, and there's a blue cloud of smoke over the pub doors. But you walk into the pubs, and you got this clear air.
Because a lot of Irish people still like to smoke.
Oh, they do. Yeah.
I mean, I've heard Irish people say you can't go to heaven unless you die first.
And one of the drawbacks of having our country partitioned, Rick, is that there's still smoking, of course, in Northern Ireland. In Derry and in Belfast, we still have smoking in the bars because it's a UK law. So I've only noticed it now. I go to Dublin a lot there, and I never really noticed smoking in the pubs before. Now I go to Dublin, and I don't notice they're smoke-free, but as soon as I go back to Belfast or back to Derry, I notice it's like being in a smoke-filled chamber. It's just incredible. Then start getting coughs and choking and all sorts of stuff.
We've got some people on the line, and we want to get them in on the conversation here. We have Judy in Illinois, and Judy took an archaeological tour of Ireland, and she had a good time, and she wants to share some thoughts on Ireland. Thanks for your call.
You're very welcome. Yes, I took the archaeological tour in Dingle that you recommend in your book.
Oh, yeah.
I want to go back and take it again, because I believe there are two different routes to be taken.
That's right.
And we always stayed outside of Dingle. In town, but not right downtown.
Mm-hmm.
At Ardna Grainne, on Spa Road, and I was wondering whether there were any other B&Bs that you recommend. And of course, now that the smoking is not allowed in the pubs, I can go in the pubs. I'm an asthmatic and could never enjoy the crack before. So our next trip, I want to do a lot of listening to the local music.
Great. Oh,
this
is such
good news.
Where would
you suggest?
Well, first of all, you're talking about Dingle, and for listeners who don't know exactly where that is, that's my personal favorite peninsula in southwest Ireland, and it's just the alternative, the non-touristic alternative to the very commercialized but still very beautiful Ring of Kerry.
Right.
Most of the tour groups go to the Ring of Kerry. We like to go to Dingle, and the town of Dingle is great. The traditional lifestyles are there. You can walk through the streets in the evening and smell the peat fires, and it's got these wonderful pubs, and it's famous for its music. And you were asking about an alternative to the B&B outside of town?
Right.
In Dingle still, you mean?
Yes, in Dingle still.
Well, we stay in a few nice places that we have.
I like Kathleen Farrell. She's a hoot. If you want to have your own local grandmother and stay in a rather humble and very inexpensive place, Kathleen O'Farrell ran the first B&B in Dingle before there was any tourism there.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
You could also stay with your guide from the archaeological tour, Tim Collins. He's got a B&B down in town itself, just beside the police station there.
That's right.
He has one, and doesn't his son have one also?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's the
The place I stay personally is the Captain's House.
Okay.
Oh, that's lovely. The Captain's House is very
house.
Nice.
I love the Captain's House. Yeah. But, you got all of them listed in my guidebook, and
right.
There must be 20 different places. But, I've every time I do the research, I look at the out-of-town places, and I think they're great. But I love Dingle Town so much. It's just a real treat to be able to tumble out of your door and walk down the street and have your choice of four or five different pubs with so much great conviviality and so much live music.
Well, that's what we want.
Good luck on your trip, and thanks for your call, Judy.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
See you, Judy.
Bye.
Good luck, Judy.
We've got Stephen McPhillamy, who's from Northern Ireland, and Declan Field, who hails from Cork in the Republic, in our studio together to get you right up to date on Ireland on Travel with Rick Steves.
The sightseeing tour from Galway to Dublin. All aboard.
Hold it. Mary Ann is coming up the street.
Hold what? Put Mary Ann in the baggage car.
I know.
All aboard!
There's plenty more in Ireland as we travel with Stephen McPhillamy and Declan Field. Now, from my experience as a tour organizer, there's two ways to do Ireland. Probably most Americans, they go on the typical tour bus route, which is going to be, Waterford Crystal, Kiss the Blarney Stone, Muckrose Abbey.
Ring of Kerry.
What's the open-air folk museum by the Shannon Airport? The castle.
Oh, Bunratty.
Bunratty Castle. Every group goes to the Bunratty Castle for their medieval banquet so on. Now, that's a fun trip, and people enjoy that, and they'll go to Killarney, and the beer's green, and the people look like leprechauns and so on. But it really is, to me, a way that you can isolate yourself from the real charm of Ireland.
Yeah, it's not the real Ireland.
Tell me about the real Ireland.
You wouldn't be seeing the real Ireland. I mean, if you want to go and see the real Ireland, you'd go into places there are certain places which you have the two. You know, you have the tourist hotspots, but you also have authentic Ireland. I mean, places like Glendalough, just south of Dublin, in the Wicklow Mountains, and it'd be a shame to miss a place like that, a beautiful monastic site in the middle of a forest. And
sure. So just because something's touristy, we don't want to veto it.
I think you have to strike the balance too. I wouldn't go as far as, with respect to Declan, to say it's not real Ireland. It exists, so therefore it's real. But it's
commercialized.
Commercialized Ireland, yeah.
Very commercialized. Yeah. And a tourist will be seen as part of the economy more than part of the party.
Yeah, but I think the welcome would still be very genuine there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you can equally strike the balance and enjoy both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, get the real sort of authentic, high-cultured and good Ireland, and also have an equally good Ireland that's very commercialised and still equally enjoyable.
Okay.
Of course, also, there's another thing to consider if you are travelling to Ireland this year. Cork is the capital of European culture. The city of Cork is the capital of European culture for the year here in Europe. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that's your town.
That's my town, Cork. Yeah.
All right.
So, I mean, if you're traveling to Ireland, I mean, there's going to be a lot of stuff going on in Cork, arts wise and theatre and music and
Ireland's booming anyways. It must have the hottest economy in Europe.
Yeah, it does.
Does it still have a hot economy? I know it was called the Celtic Tiger economy, right?
Yeah. I think our economy's slowed down a wee bit, but we're still growing at 2 or 3% higher than all the other top economies in the world. So.
Now, I understand for the first time in history you have a higher per capita income than the English.
Yeah.
That's incredible. You're importing labor instead of exporting it.
We're importing labor. Not only higher per capita income than the English, but also like the Finns. And I think the only people who are beating us are the people from Luxembourg.
Is that right?
Yeah, like it's the highest per capita income in Europe.
And what goes hand in hand with that is high costs.
It's expensive
in Ireland.
It is expensive. Yeah.
I think it's as expensive as England.
Yeah.
And it used to be cheaper than England.
It used to be a lot cheaper than England, yeah.
So what are some tricks for enjoying Ireland without going broke?
Well,
tough question.
Well, maybe to try, you know, to try avoid the swanky hotels, you know, try and stay more in the B&Bs and the local places, you know, that you'll find in and around, even in a big city like Dublin, you know, you'll find a B&B not too far away from the city centre out in Dunleary or something. You know, you could get the Dart in, which is our local kind of metro system.
Sure, the Dart takes you from the suburbs or the outlying towns
very efficiently
into downtown.
Yeah, like 20 minutes and you're in downtown Dublin.
I'm just looking at one of my guidebooks here and a listing for a small town in the west, and you'll pay 70 pounds for a bed and breakfast now. That's quite expensive, actually. Figure $2 per pound. A humble bed and breakfast with a private bathroom and a big breakfast included is £60. That would be
60 euros.
Euros. That would be euros. Yeah.
These are pounds.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, these are euros. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. So it's not so much. So you got about $90, $80 for a double room, and that includes a big hearty breakfast.
Yeah.
So figure you got $30 worth of food. And
I mean the breakfast. I've got friends now from France, funnily enough, that come over to Ireland and go fishing in Cavan, and they say that their breakfast is for them the breakfast and lunch. I mean,
I think how it historically originated.
Yeah.
A huge fry,
out in the
fields, and you can come back at dinner time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so like you don't effectively need to buy another dinner or lunch in the middle of the day.
And I've had B&B hosts that actually will allow you to take a sandwich away or something like that, or you can ask if that can be done. But there are ways to cut corners. You'll stay in a B&B, and what do we say? It's $40 per person with breakfast in a very, very cozy environment, very friendly.
Yeah,
and then you would have your pub meals.
Oh, the pub meals, yeah.
Yeah, probably much less expensive than going into a big hotel.
Yeah.
Or a restaurant
You have a daily specials.
Very big meals, you know, a nice big bowl. You can get a very substantial big bowl of chowder over there on the West Coast, €5, €6.
That's great. you can get around. The bus transportation is fairly inexpensive. The trains supplement that. Problem with public transportation in Ireland is a lot of the trains go in and out of Dublin, and if you're going across the Grain, it can be frustrating. You'd want to use buses.
Yeah, our train system is, to me, anyway, fairly disastrous, to be honest. Like, there's no north-south corridor, for example, or no along the west coast. You can't go north and south along the west coast. And
New express train, though, from Belfast to Dublin
is pretty good, but very expensive.
But if
35 euros return. It's
35 round trips, so you're talking $45 to go for a day trip from Dublin to Belfast. Think about that. You can get up there in, 90 minutes or something like that, I think, now. Is that possible? 3 hours. 3 hours. Okay, so it's not quite as fast as I thought. It's not quite
a TGV. 2.5 hours.
Yeah. 2.5 hours. But you can conceivably make Belfast a day trip from Dublin.
Oh, you can do that.
Makes a lot of sense. In fact, I would recommend anybody thinking of going to Ireland not think of their trip as complete without doing all of Ireland. That means the Republic of Ireland, that's three quarters of the island basically, and the north of Ireland, which is the part of Ireland that's ruled from London, part of Great Britain.
And ideally, someone going up the north would allocate 2, maybe 3 days. 2 days, is pretty much good enough to see Northern Ireland. It's not the biggest place in the world. But even if it's only going to be just a day tour to Belfast, that has to be done.
I agree. You just cannot say you've seen Ireland without heading up to the north. And, for 15 years, we've been taking groups up to the north, Stephen, and everybody who goes up there is impressed by the beauty, friendly people. It's more British feeling than it is in the Republic, I think, because there's this heavy British influence. But there's nothing dangerous or scary about going into the Northeast days from a tourist point of view.
Not at all. I mean, I've always found, I think I can safely say with my hand on my heart that and from a fact perspective, we've never had a tourist attacked up there. Never a bus attacked, a tourist bus, never anyone accosted for because they're visitors.
And the people who are violent about the struggle between the North and the Republic and so on, if they wanted to target the tourists, they could.
Absolutely.
And
they're not interested. Not interested at all.
That's good of them.
Protestants would welcome you with open arms. Catholics will welcome you with open arms. They just won't welcome each other. And that's the problem.
I gotcha. And you want to use common sense. I mean, you just don't go into a Protestant pub and sing Catholic songs.
Oh, yeah. You have to be slightly sensitive. I mean,
and that's just heads up. Yeah, I mean, I even noticed the colors are important in the north. There's orange and there's green, right?
Yeah. I mean, on a lot of the doors to the pubs in Centre City Belfast, they'll say no football shirts. And that is, if you're wearing football shirts, if you're wearing Glasgow Rangers, it means you're a Protestant.
It's kind of like gang colors here.
Exactly. It's like gang colors.
So that's just common street savvy.
Yeah, but in saying that also, if you are in downtown Belfast, you're in one of the safest city centres in Europe.
I think so. That's my experience. Now, if you're looking for traditional Irish culture, you need to go, I think, to a Gaeltacht. And I reckon describe this as a national park for the traditional culture, where the government is subsidizing or helping fund the survival of the traditional Irish ways. These are mostly on the west coast, where people actually speak Gaelic.
Yeah, they speak Irish, or we call it Irish.
Gaeltacht literally means Irish speaking.
Irish speaking. Yeah, Gaeltacht.
People living there get tax breaks. They get anybody wanting to invest there will get grants and. Families who prove that they can speak Irish fluently get a cash sum each year from the government.
Is that right?
A nice little boost. Wow. So they send inspectors around, to talk to you. It's also big business now as well. See, in Ireland, the Gaelic language or the Irish language is compulsory in school. You have to learn it. You have no choice from the age of 4 until the age of 18.
And the government is spending money to get people to speak the traditional Irish language.
Yeah.
And you can imagine when the inspector is coming up to the door, the people inside in the house to say, "Here he comes, boys." So they start speaking Irish.
Slancha.
Once you get the euros in the back pocket, then we'll be back into English.
and also in Ireland, you can't get a job in the government if you don't have it. So you kind of have to. You have to have it.
You can't get a job in the Irish bureaucracy, the government, without speaking Irish.
Postmen, policemen.
You have to have a working knowledge of Irish if you want to work.
Well, there are regions of Ireland where people speak Gaelic as their routine, everyday language.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the tourist steps in and they turn their head and they slip into English without missing a beat.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the tourist goes away and they turn back to each other and carry on in their Irish.
Yeah.
And in the areas where Irish is the first language, English is also spoken very beautifully because they're brought up speaking Gaelic, and the way sometimes we grunt at each other when we speak English and not pronounce full words. They pronounce everything beautifully.
I love it. Yeah.
Like my mother's from an Irish speaking area, and every word is pronounced right because she learned English at school. So it'd be hello, how are you doing? Everything's very slow and just a very nice way of
I just
expressing the English language as well because of the Gaelic influence.
I love being on the west coast of Ireland, where they say the next parish over is Boston.
Yeah.
Isn't that nice? Yeah. And you see people just staring out to sea. Aye, the shores of America.
Yeah. And I, it's funny, I was reading a thing this morning in a book, and it was about the sun setting into the west. And the sun setting into the west is you're looking towards the future. The sun rising in the east, you're looking towards your motherland. You're looking from where you came from.
Is that right? Now, is that dealing with the immigration to America?
Well, to a certain extent. And also, like as you said, like you'd love to be over in the west. But I mean, I whenever I'm over in the west, I find a fierce sort of feeling of optimism, you know. And I think a lot of it does come from around the world, actually. A lot of west coast communities are, you know, people who are looking towards the future.
Right.
You know.
So, sitting here in Seattle, that's a nice thought. I think it's fun when you get to talk to the people in the Gaeltachts especially, but Ireland in general. You've got this famous gift of gab, and that's no hollow tourist slogan. You really have an art with the language.
Yeah.
And as a traveler, you've got to grab the opportunity to hang out and talk with people. That is essential. Forget the museums. If you haven't talked to people, you really haven't been in Ireland. And just, I'll never forget the fun. I've been wrapped up in conversations in people's homes and the sun sets and nobody even thinks to turn on the lights. And all of a sudden we realize we're talking in the dark.
You know?
And it just, the conversation just combusts on its own. And people have just a great way. I remember asking a guy on the West Coast over in Dingle, were you born here? And he said, no, it was about 5 miles down the road. And then later on I said, have you lived here all your life? And he said, not yet. Yeah, that's probably just for you guys. It's probably just the way you talk, but I found it very poetic. Yeah,
it's very flattering to hear that from an American. You have one of the great things about your country to be that you're great talkers and great conversationalists. And
the time is not really money in your culture as much as it is in our country, I don't think.
Yeah, well, yeah, we're working to live in Ireland. We work to live rather than
live to work.
I'm proud of that fact.
Well, there's also a thing about the language in Ireland. You know, it's like writers like James Joyce and Jonathan Swift, and these people are, you know, come from.
That's right. You got all these great writers.
Yeah, and like these writers are using language as a kind of a plastic material, almost. You know, something that they can, you know, work with and play around with, and they're pulling new meanings out of words. You know, so. Irish people have always liked to play with language.
I love that concept. It's a tool that you use to... 877-333-RICK. We've got Alan in South Jersey.
Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
Watched your show for years, and we've done some international travel, taking the kids to Mexico. I've been to England. Now my kids are 14 and 12, and I'd love to take them to Ireland. I have a two-part question. The first is, obviously, you talk about trying to watch your money and get the most out of the vacation. Do you recommend a B&B for the parents and the children?
Yeah. I mean, if you're going over, you'd obviously probably have to take two bedrooms, you know, for the parents and the children in a B&B.
Most will have family rooms as well if you wanted them all going together.
You could save money that way as well by going into a family room.
How old are your children, Alan?
14 and 12.
14 and 12. At that age, my wife and I finally spent the money and got two rooms. You know, for 10 years, we traveled with our kids in the same room. We'd get a triple and just kind of improvise the fourth bed. But it's, you know, in B&Bs, you'll find that they charge per person. In a lot of cases, rather than per room, so you don't have this economic need to pack everybody into a room like you would have in a hotel where a quad costs just a little more than a double.
Okay. I am Protestant, and my kids and my wife are Catholic, and we just wanted to be aware of any type of protocol that we should maintain while we're there.
Yeah, I think there'd be absolutely
no problem whatsoever,
And I'd be extremely surprised if you found it. For example, like, I live in Northern Ireland, and I'm Catholic personally, and I have two little daughters, 8 and 5, and if I ever once heard them speak anything bad about a Protestant, they'd be in serious, serious trouble. You know, you're not going to have any issue there. The problem in Northern Ireland is between the British loyalists and between Irish nationalists, the religion certainly comes into it, but you'll be identified as an American first and foremost, and no one will have any interest in your religion.
I'm very impressed with the general Irish population, how just really wants to find a way to work together, and extremists are the ones that sort of blast reasonability out of the water occasionally. Yeah. I see kids on the streets of Belfast dancing together, and they're actual sort of government-funded summer camps where Protestant and Catholic kids get together and they get away from some of the baggage of their parents.
Yeah, there's many initiatives there bringing us together, and someday hopefully they'll bear fruit.
It's
going to be a while, we know that. But
oh, yeah. So it was a deep-seated, very historic problem. Yeah. But my wife and I, Alan, I'm Protestant, my wife's Catholic, and we've been going to Ireland for years. And it's, you know, I just feel like a I feel like an honorary Catholic when I'm in Ireland. It's great.
And Alan, you know, the aspect of you being an American is to your benefit in Ireland. It's the one big society in Ireland where Americans are genuinely liked and embraced and welcomed, especially.
Oh yeah,
it is a beautiful country. It's been a wish of ours to go there, and I would just love to get my kids over there and again expose them to international travel and see the rest of the world.
That's absolutely great. Good luck on your trip, Alan.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time.
Sláinte, Alan.
Sláinte. Okay. All right. What does sláinte mean now for folks?
To his good health.
To your good health in Gaelic, in Old Irish. Sláinte. What's another good Irish word we should know?
We could say...
Caid míle fáilte.
100,000 welcomes.
100,000 welcomes.
Say that again.
Caid míle fáilte.
Gorev Mahagot? What is that?
Gorev Mahagot is thank you.
Thank you very much.
I remembered a word in Gaelic. Gorev Mahagot. Hey. There's plenty more in Ireland coming right up on Travel with Rick Steves.
Nazywam się Kasia Derlicka, jestem z Warszawy, z Polski i podróżuję z Rickiem Stevem. And that was Polish for my name is Kasia Derlicka from Warsaw, Poland, and I travel with Rick Steves. Nazywam się Kasia Derlicka, Warszawy, z Polski i podróżuję z Rickiem Stevem.
Rickiem Stevem? That's my name in Polish?
That's your name in Polish.
Rickiem Steven. Dziękuję.
Dziękuję.
Rick. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We got George in San Diego, and George, you got a question about Ireland?
Yes. My name is George, and I'm planning a trip with my wife by car for about 4 weeks this summer, and we plan to sort of do the clockwise loop in Rick's guidebook, but we also would like to do two of those weeks in two different places with a self-catering apartment type thing.
Wow, that sounds great.
We really love the idea of settling in a place and having a chance of meeting the real people.
When we take a group around Europe, how long are our tours? Like they're 14 days?
14 days, yeah.
So you got exactly what we do. You got 14 days for heavy-duty sightseeing and then 2 weeks for staying put and really connecting with the community. Declan and Stephen, what do you think would be a good place for an American with an interest in Ireland to settle down for a week?
Two places would spring to my mind. One would be Galway. I also love Dublin. If there's something to be found there, mm-hmm. that's cheap and cost effective, maybe an apartment or a self catering house somewhere nearby, the city centre or on the outskirts, Dublin's a great place. Great.
I was thinking the same thing. Yeah, Dublin.
Dublin. Yeah, for the culture and for the insight into kind of all of Ireland, really. Because you can pick up a lot from the museums and the galleries and whatever that you have in Dublin City. But as I said earlier on, Cork is the city of European culture. Mm-hmm. for this coming year. And there's a certain place in West Cork called the Beara Peninsula, and that is absolutely beautiful. And you can get self-catering cottages down in the Beara Peninsula, and you can use that as a striking out point, for getting up into Cork City or even going into Kerry from there. You're not that far.
So, George, Beara Peninsula is down in the south, just, I think, to the east of the famous Ring of Kerry.
That's right, yeah.
Kinsale?
It's on from Kinsale, further south than Kinsale.
So now, just before we go on, I think it's very important to review. We got this self-catering apartment you're talking about, or a cottage in the country that's rented by the week that comes with a kitchen. That's
with a kitchen, yes, sir.
Very inexpensive compared to renting by the day in a bed and breakfast, you see. And I think our vote is to take 1 week in a big city, and it would be either Cork or Dublin, and 1 week in the countryside to feel the rural tempo of life and so on. And Declan recommends Brera Peninsula. I know Dingle Peninsula so well. I'm really charmed by Dingle, so personally I would stay in Dingle Town. What was your other question, George?
Well, Dingle and Westport are our preliminary choices.
Well, Westport would be interesting.
Westport would be good also, too.
It's a nice jumping off point for a lot of stuff up in Connemara and Donegal.
We found on the continent doing the same sort of thing that we like some museums in some cities, but we really like the small places.
All right.
Westport's got some very good, I know personally, some good properties for rent. It's a town that suffered a lot during the famine and emigration has ravaged the place years ago. Grace Kelly's grandfather came from there, for example. But it's come on a lot. The people there have worked hard over in Glasgow and in London and New York and Boston and whatever else, and they've put their money back in. A lot of them put them back into very nice and comfortable cottages and self-catering little houses on the coast. And you could also, if you were there, George, take a hike up Croagh Patrick, which is our mountain there, nothing seriously high. It's about 2,500 feet tall. But that's where St. Patrick went up and did his penance for 40 days.
For any snakes.
Oh, yeah, well, our snakes are all in the Parliament. So you'll find them there.
There you go. George,
can you suggest any resources that would be, say, online, for example, to locate these kinds of rentals?
Yeah, you'll get them on the Irish Tourist Board's website.
And, Tourist Board?
It's called Tourism Ireland.
Ah,
so if you go into Google or any of these search engines and just type in Tourism Ireland, it'll come up. Give you all the information. You can book them online. And there's the photographs and everything, which will help you. There's reviews of people who have stayed there before.
Great.
George, thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. That's great. We'll do the B&B thing out of the guidebook in between the stops.
Well, thanks. And you're going to make some very good friends in the B&Bs. I just think that's one of the highlights of traveling through Ireland is actually connecting with these folks in these wonderful B&Bs. And I'm sort of envious. You got a whole month for Ireland.
Well, I'm also traveling with a Finnegan, and she looks like she belongs there.
Right. Absolutely. She must be very beautiful.
All right. Thank you,
gentlemen.
You bet.
Good day.
Good day. We have Donna on the phone from North Carolina. Thanks for your call. What's on your mind?
Oh, I just want to make comments. I'm chomping at the bit. I just got back from Ireland for my first trip to Ireland. My husband and I went with my 12-year-old, so I have comments for all your call-ins, and I'd like to hear from your guests as well. I didn't hear a whole lot about the music, and the music in Ireland was just the best, and that's sort of why we went.
Where did you enjoy the music?
We were staying, actually, at the Fitzpatrick Castle in Killiney.
Killiney, yeah.
Yeah.
Killiney,
and,
yeah.
And we were in Dalkey on Wednesday night at MacDougall's.
McDonough's,
that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, McDonough's, yeah.
And,
a friend of mine runs that session.
He brought his fiddle, and there was maybe 20 players, and they just gathered in the corner, and the people were so friendly, and they played and played and played and played and played.
This to me is classic Ireland. I mean, here we have somebody calling from North Carolina, and they went to a pub, and Declan across from me from Cork knows the fella that runs the place. And Ireland is that small and charming and cozy. I mean, you can have a third of all the people in the entire Republic of Ireland gathering together for one mass when the Pope comes to town, right? Or is that at Croke Park? Or
it was in Phoenix Park.
Phoenix Park. I was there for that as well, yeah. Over half the population of Ireland was there.
Half the population gathered at one mass.
I mean, that's right.
I got goosebumps just thinking about that. That is so cool.
Yeah.
And then you can watch TV one night and you see the most popular traditional musicians playing their Irish folk music. And the next day, they're on the other side of the island in some humble little pub entertaining 20 people.
Absolutely.
It's that sort of intimate and that sort of accessible.
Wonderful.
And Donna, you would have noticed, this is Stephen up from Northern Ireland, you would have noticed great connections between your Appalachian music down there and the music of the Carolinas and the Irish music. Bluegrass, I think.
We're quite into it. My husband opens the Merle Fest here in Wilkesboro with Doc Watson every other year. So we were on our way to Omaha, to the American Folk Park, to see their Christmas thing. But we really, you can't go as fast in Ireland as you can go in North Carolina. I mean, you can't go down the road. You can't get there.
Yeah.
I want to mention we are going back. And Omaha's on the agenda, that's for sure.
You know, there are certain places, you guys, that are trendy for music, right? I mean, Doolin used to be the place. I met so many, when I went to Doolin, people go straight to Doolin, this humble little town on the west of Ireland. Ennis is a great place, isn't it, for music?
Yeah, some great Irish traditional music.
West Donegal up in the northwest, great fiddle playing tradition up there.
What's really hot now for traditional music in Ireland?
In terms of where to go?
Where to go, yeah.
I would think West Donegal is coming on. That's where Enya's from. They have a lovely haunting voice up there when they sing in Gaelic. Mm.
And there's some great music as well coming out of Galway. You know, there's some.
I love the pubs in Galway.
Yeah. Wow.
On one of the pubs in Galway, there was a painting on the wall that showed two roads coming together in the middle of the countryside and a little fire in the middle of the road and people dancing around.
Crossroads dancing.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was so evocative to me because this is how the people would come together where there's not even a town. It's just farm communities.
There's actually another thing, Donna. If you walked out of McDonough's in Dalkey and took a right and walked down to the end of the village and you walk up to another pub called Finnegan's, you could walk in there and you might see Bono drinking at the bar. That's his local.
Oh, my goodness, we walked right by it.
Yeah. Yeah, wow, I mean, he drinks in there quite regularly, you know. But
we'd
I mean,
have to go back.
And he was the first citizen to break the smoking ban. he owns a bar downtown as well. He was caught breaking the smoking ban with one of the guys from Metallica.
Well,
that's rock and roll, man, you know.
I just have to tell you that Rick's advice, just don't worry, you're going to go back and plan to go back because you cannot see everything that you want to see. And I have a whole list. As far as the pubs and the children, just remember, you can't feed people in the restaurants after children under 12 after about 6:30.
6 o'clock, yeah.
Yeah. And we weren't aware of that, but we did stay in the timeshare at the Fitzpatrick, and so it was like, you know, we cooked.
I'm sorry, what's this deal now? You can't feed kids in a pub?
Well, they say no children allowed in the pubs after.
No children after 9.
Yeah.
After 9, are those?
Because I've taken my kids into the pubs, and of course they can't be served alcohol, but we've gotten them a Coke or something, and they have
We now have a new Minister for Justice.
Yeah.
Who's sort of stamping down on our he doesn't like the sort of boozy aspect of our culture, so we have a problem with underage drinking in Ireland, so he wants kids off the premises.
Right,
totally.
Interesting. Okay.
But it wasn't bad. I mean, he was at that Fitzpatrick. We had a resource so that he could stay there, and we went on to the pub, and that was fine. He enjoyed the Irish television. But let me tell you, we took him, as we were also trying to go north, we took him to New Grange during the solstice.
New Grange during the solstice.
Oh, it was wonderful. We did not sign up to be one of the 24,000 people
to get in.
We tried to get in the morning. You know,
quite a crush.
Donna, thank you so much for your call. You sound like a person who loves to travel.
Well, I'm going to call you the next time you have a trip about Ireland. And don't forget the ship in New Ross. You must go see that.
The famine ship. Yeah.
I love the famine ship. We visited that with our television crew and put that in our show. That's a famine ship on the south coast of Ireland near Waterford.
Your Waterford, that was rebuilt using traditional techniques.
And they've got people dressed in the costumes of the day when half of Ireland was either starving or going to America.
Absolutely.
These are the coffin ships.
Most people died on the way over.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, we have relatives from the Scots-Irish North and from Powers Court around the South, and we are definitely going to be back.
Brilliant.
And thank you for letting
Fantastic
me call.
Fantastic, Donna.
I'd love to hear your enthusiasm. You make me want to go there right now. Thanks a lot, Donna.
Okay, bye.
God bless.
You know, when we're talking about pubs, you guys, Ireland has this new sort of fast-moving economy. And I understand the old heavy Guinness and the stout. It's not – there's people are drinking more lagers now and there's a little less heavy beer drinking. It's just not in keeping with a fast-moving, high-tech economy.
There still is gallons of Guinness drunk every day in Dublin and all around, you know, like thousands of
rivers,
hectoliters of Guinness.
But you're
also getting more kind of more Europeanized drinking, such as, you know, white wine and red wine, and, you know, people drinking lagers and light beers.
You go into a pub in Ireland, you say a beer, you'll get a Guinness, won't you?
Yeah. Well, you know, if you say a pint.
A pint?
Yeah.
Okay, you want a pint.
And I've never seen it in all my years. I mean, I might be corrected here, but I've never seen a woman drink a pint of Guinness.
I'll stop that.
Have you?
Of course I have.
Well, maybe it's north south.
In the north. Well, now they had a woman's Guinness. They had a Guinness Light.
Well, they tried that? Yeah, they tried that, and
it was an
unmitigated disaster.
I think a lot of people were just appalled that they would even compromise this heavy stout. You can draw your name in the head, right?
That's right, yeah.
Or at least you can draw a shamrock on the head.
Yeah, and you should be able to, if you've got a decent pint, the rings off the creamy head will sort of stick to the side of the glass as the pint goes down. So you should have most of your heads kind of on the side of the glass by the time you finish your pint.
Is that right?
And it's meant to be the sign of a good pint of Guinness.
They say Guinness doesn't travel very well. Is it actually better in Ireland?
I think it is. Like the thing about Guinness is it's the quality of the water. Mm-hmm. Which is to a large extent, you know, indicative of our. It plays a part in making a decent pint.
It's got the peat and all the
There's a spring outside James's Gate up in Dublin now, and they get the water for the brewery there, and that's got a special quality. That water, it's very soft water and it's very clear water.
But it must travel all right, because the biggest Guinness brewery in the world is in Lagos in Nigeria.
That's right.
Is that right?
The Nigerians are the biggest Guinness drinking market in the world. We're only the fourth.
There's a good
Cameroon
for you.
Cameroon is second. That great Irish bastion.
You could also say that it obviously doesn't travel well, you know, because it has to be brewed in Africa,
yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
You know, another thing they try to do at Guinness is ice Guinness, actually making it cold.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's still around or not.
It still is, but I don't think it's too great for the old liver, you know.
Guinness is just better room temperature, basically.
Yeah. Well, slightly cool. It's slightly chilled, but you know, not freezing cold. So
now, I like Guinness when I'm in Ireland, but I actually like Murphy's better.
Yeah, well, so do I. You've got good taste, Rick.
Thank you very much.
Murphy's is brewed in Cork.
Oh, is that a Cork thing? So this is a little bit of pride, huh?
Murphy's and Beamish are both brewed in Cork.
Okay, but that's Guinness. Another stout, which has a little different
stout,
personality.
Yeah. Yeah.
Personally, I'm a whiskey drinker.
Is that right?
In the north, a lot
and what's the difference? Well, but now you got Irish whiskey and Scotch whiskey.
Yeah, Irish is obviously better, but also distilled three times. So from if you're a whiskey connoisseur, for example, now you'd know that Irish has a much softer feel. It doesn't burn your throat. The Scots only distill theirs twice, so it's burnier. And you'd often hear as well, when they malt their barley, they malt
it's very mean with the turf, you know.
they have a sort of peaty taste from their whiskey. You can actually taste the peat of it. Ours is softer and purer. But again, you know,
is that a qualitative thing, or just the Scots actually like their peaty flavor?
It's an acquired taste. I mean, like they're two different things, you know. Yeah, I'm the same as you, Stephen. I'd prefer an Irish whiskey because it's smoother. But a lot of people would like Scotch whiskey because, you know, it's got a different taste. It's got different complexities of taste. And
they're spelled different, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
We're allowed to have an E. They're not.
Is that right? You can't put an E in a Scotch whiskey.
No, it's always W-H-I-S-K-Y.
I didn't know that.
We have the E.
Now, the big distillery is Bushmills, right?
Bushmills in the north, Jameson in the south.
Jameson in the south. Because are they together or something?
They're all actually owned by Irish distillers who are in turn owned by Pernod from France.
Is that right?
So,
okay, now, because in my travels, I found three different places where you can actually visit a distillery and taste the Bushmills or the Jamesons in South Coast near Kinsale, in Dublin, and up on the Antrim Coast, on the north edge of Ireland.
Jameson in Dublin now is only a museum. It's not actually, no whiskey's made there anymore.
Right?
It's made actually down in Declan's part of the world, down in Cork.
Okay, because I really enjoyed the Bushmills tour on the south. I did not like it in Dublin, and I loved it up in Antrim Coast. But they actually do a taste test where you have six or eight different whiskeys, right?
Yeah. You taste American whiskey and Scotch and Irish whiskey. You make a comparative tasting.
When you're going into a pub, for me, the reason to go to the pub is the crack. That's the conversation. And the music. You got to have a beer, too, to lubricate all that stuff.
But, of course you do.
You know, but the music there is one of the great treats in European travel. Trad is the lingo, isn't it? Trad.
Traditional music.
And it's actually, it would be to me like square dancing being popular in America. It just wouldn't really happen. But in Ireland, it really is cool, the traditional music. Is that right? It has a modern feel to it?
Yeah.
I think as we become more European, we want to also, you know, explore and hold on to our Irishness more, but not just out of some baseless reason, just simply because it is a very good music as well. I don't know anyone who has a pulse who can sit and listen to Irish music and not tap their feet. Anyone with any soul has to, you know,
it's
tap
true.
Along.
It's true.
Along.
I got to tell you, some of the most fond memories for me traveling anywhere in Europe is in a good pub in Ireland with new friends, great music, beautiful Guinness, and you're really enjoying the essence of Ireland.
Yeah.
But there's another thing about the music now. You're saying that it's actually cool to listen to traditional Irish music. There was a band called Planxty, and they were very active in the early 70s. And one of their musicians was Andy Irvine, and he went around. There was a kind of a renaissance in the folk tradition across the world, and he went out into Eastern Europe, and he started listening to the influences of Eastern European music, like Bulgarian music and Greek music, and he brought back instruments like the bouzouki. The bouzouki, which is a Greek musical instrument, but you'll see it being played in Irish bars, and mm-hmm. people were saying, like, what are they doing playing bouzoukis over here? But, I mean, when you listen to what the Irish musicians are doing with these instruments, they're not only exploring Irish ideas, but they're also exploring world ideas, you know, with Irish music. And it's for that as well that it's still a dynamic form of music. You know, it's not like square dancing in the States,
right.
where it's people are just, you know, doing the traditional dance and nothing else. It's actually moving along, and there's a dynamic in it, you know. So
it's a living expression of this culture.
Yeah,
that's a great thing. Thank you very much, Stephen and Declan, for this fascinating discussion on your wonderful country, Ireland.
Thanks for having us.
Such things as strangers, just friends we have not yet met.
I like that. You guys can head on down to Rory's.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington. There's more online in the radio section at ricksteves.com, where you can look up information on this and other programs in this series. You can also participate in discussion boards on a variety of travel topics and submit your questions and comments. That's at ricksteves.com. Join us next time as we travel with Rick Steves.